But let's welcome back. It's Tuesday. Pam Colleen likes to join us after 10 o'clock on Tuesdays. She is nutritional consultant and healthy living advocate. Good morning again, Pam.
Good morning, Tom.
Now, I had great response last week when we talked about diet. So I thought, you know what? I don't think we gave it the full treatment, only because we were talking about diets and what to look out for. But I thought it'd be a great exercise after 10:30 if you could share some insights when people want to construct their own diet, or what to look for when you're putting together a lunch or a breakfast or a dinner and maybe some healthy snacks if you're looking to do that. But first, going back to our own diets, we have in our country, and it's the basis for many people's nutritional habits or plans, and that's the Canada Food Guide. Is that a good starting point for people when they want to look at healthy eating?
No, I wouldn't say it is at all. The Canada's Food Guide is basically based on the four lobby groups. It's not based on what we believe to be, you know, the four healthy food groups. It's based on lobby pressure. And it's not based on evidence-based science. It's not based on common sense whatsoever. It's purely political. And so a friend of mine, Dr. Louise Light, who was a whistleblower for the USDA in the United States, she was working on the 1992 USDA food pyramid, and she and her staff went to the Secretary of Agriculture and said to him at the time that they should not be recommending more than 3 to 5 servings of carbohydrates in the diet per day. And the Secretary of Agriculture returned their recommendations to them and said, oh, we have to put it to 6 to 11 servings of carbohydrates every day. So it was this purely political pressure that made them decide upon those numbers. And she and her team, both, all of them, warned the Secretary of Agriculture that if they decided upon that as the food guide, as the final food guide, that they would indeed create a diabetes and obesity epidemic. And so, you know, essentially, this is what the government has done to us, is by allowing this very, very high carbohydrate diet to be so pervasive in our culture today. And, you know, these are the people, unfortunately, at Health Canada who are supposed to be protecting us. And they're really doing a terrible job at that. If anything, what they're doing is protecting industry before they protect us.
Now, what are the recommendations by the Canada Food Guide? Are they the same as the food pyramid down in the States, or do we have
Pretty close.
Okay, so what are the recommendations they say?
Well, right now, actually, just to give you a bit of a buzz as to what's going on in the United States, is they've changed the food guide to look like a plate. And on that plate is basically proportioned out as to how much protein, how much fruit, how much vegetable should be on that plate. And so, you know, in grain as well. So they're, again, pleasing the lobbyists, but being very cryptic as to what is indeed a healthy diet, because they don't really define protein per se. And in their new recommendations, they're actually even saying you can substitute complete protein, complete animal protein, for plant protein, which is absurd, which is the furthest thing from being healthy as possible. So, and secondly, the other major, major problem I have with this new food guide, which, make no mistake, Tom, this food guide is going to influence our new food guide here in Canada. It always does. And they obliterate the notion of having fat on your dinner plate, which really should be the main focus of your food choices, is to make sure you're getting adequate amounts of animal fat. So again, this food guide is very pervasive in its recommendations of a too high a carbohydrate diet.
Now, when I look at the food guide here, so I'm a 41-year-old male. Here are the recommendations for me. 8 to 10 servings of vegetables and fruit. All right. Well, I don't eat any fruit whatsoever, and I'm not eating 8 to 10 servings of vegetables in a day. 8 servings of grain products, 2 milk and alternatives, 3 meat and alternatives. I apparently am not getting nearly what I need to get according to the Canada Food Guide.
No, it's a joke. And you know, if you were to add up all those carbohydrates, and I've done this, I've called Health Canada, I've asked them to estimate how many grams of carbohydrates that they would be recommending based on their food guide. And Tom, it's something in the vicinity of anywhere from 200, 300, or even more grams of carbohydrates per day. And this is just lunacy. This is, you know, dangerous dietary advice. We have one hormone in order to be able to control our blood sugar. is called insulin. We have one pancreas, or one organ, the pancreas, to help, obviously, with controlling blood sugar. If we were supposed to eat that much sugar in our diet, we would have a backup system, and we simply don't. So eating 200 or 300 or more grams of carbohydrates every day in the diet is going to lead to a lot of health problems.
All right. Now, let me just back it up a second, because for those who may not be aware, carbohydrates are simply sugars are simple, or what we call simple carbohydrates. So one, like the glucose or sucrose or fructose or whatever, is one unit of carbohydrate. And then long carbohydrates are just simply those linked together. So potatoes or pasta or rice. Starches are just a lot of sugars linked together. So we have to think almost of starches and sugars we should treat as close to equivalent, Pam.
Well, actually, it's probably even more simple than that, Tom.
Okay.
Fruits, vegetables, and grains, they're all basically sources of sugar. So for me, carbohydrates are fruits, vegetables, and grains. The food guide, of course, does differentiate between the two, but we can't forget that they're all sources of sugar. And when you eat them in excess, it's going to challenge your blood sugar levels. It doesn't matter if it's a simple or a complex carbohydrate. If you abuse carbohydrates, period, you will throw off blood sugar levels in the body.
Right. Okay. And so the I think where a lot of confusion comes in is when you have that term, simple sugar, we think of, the sugar I put in my tea. Complex, by putting in complex, it must be good. It's complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply many sugars linked together.
Well, what it is if you eat a complete vegetable or a complete fruit, it's not going to raise your blood sugar as fast as, say, eating white flour or white sugar. And so on the surface, that seems like a good thing. But it shouldn't be an excuse to overconsume fruits, vegetables, or grains.
And, of course, when we see now the rise of diabetes in this country and the rise of obesity in this country, to me, there's a clear linkage to the fact that we overconsume carbohydrates in all forms.
Well, absolutely. And, there's records of diabetes back a couple of thousand years. And even, in Greek and Roman times, of course, they knew they could identify diabetes, for example, by smelling the urine of an individual. And they knew that if this individual had that particular odor to their urine, that they were probably overeating berries or overeating honey. And so this is a matter of historic record. But unfortunately, today, we're not just turning to berries or fruits and honey or even maple syrup as our sources of sugar. We have virtually countless sources of sugar available to us at our fingertips, and it's any source of sugar, when it's abused, is going to be bad for you. It doesn't matter if it's honey, maple syrup, it doesn't matter if it's fruit, it doesn't matter if it's fine white powder. You have to be careful with sugar, period.
Now, and then let me back up even further, because you talked about, for those who haven't heard you before and those are wondering, like, what is she talking about? Animal fats. Before we go away to break, or maybe, I'll leave it after the break, because I know it's more than a 30-second explanation. But when we come back after the break, give the audience once again your explanation about why we shouldn't be ignoring animal fats. And I'll tell you a story that it just kind of dawned on me over the weekend. When we feed an infant, the number one thing we want to talk about with infants is making sure, what's the number one food? Breast milk. Right. Exactly. All right. So, and if not, whole milk. Okay. Got to make sure infants get whole milk. And the reason pediatricians or developmental doctors talk about is because the brain needs that fat. And it's not just the energy in the fat, it's the essential fatty acids. So we try to make sure babies get as much as possible of this fat in mother's milk or whole milk. And then after two, we're like, and then don't worry about it anymore. Which is crazy, because your brain never stops needing to rebuild and make connections and energy. And it's like, why should we be ignoring it just as soon as we're done? If we recommend it for babies, shouldn't we be recommending it for adults? So I want to get your thoughts and explain why essential fatty acids and fats from animals are critical to an adult diet. And I'll get you to do that when we come back. Because if people are listening to you for the first time, they're like, what did she say? What? Because you can put people off, I think, by it's like, that's not what I heard. That's not Canada Food Guide, I thought was good. Everything I've heard has been low fat. Make sure I get more carbohydrates. That's what I want to get. But you come at it from a different perspective. Pam Colleen is our nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate. She'll join us after the break and talk about why we need animal fats, and then other diets to look out for. And then after 10:30, she's going to help us construct the diet. What you should be looking for, and what a great breakfast, lunch, or a typical dinner would be, and I'll see what Pam eats on a regular basis. My name's Tom McConnell. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. 10:21's our time. Pam Colleen joins us on the program. She's a nutritional consultant and healthy living advocate. And last week we were talking about diets, and I thought there was a lot more to explore. So we're continuing the conversation this week. And Pam, for those who hadn't heard you before, and you talked about the Canada Food Guide and the improper recommendations in your mind of the Canada Food Guide, and that they don't include enough animal fats. And then when the person hears that, they automatically think, well, wait a second. Doesn't fat make me fat? Isn't this the fat I want to avoid? Isn't this the wrong type of fat to be putting on my plate?
Well, animal fats, of course, have been wrongly demonized now for, 50, 60 years. And, we've really had our eye off the target, because over the last 50, 60 years, as we've reduced our consumption of animal fat and cholesterol, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever before in the history of mankind. What we have increased, however, to make up for this reduction, of course, in animal fats and cholesterol, is we have increased our consumption of plant-based foods in general. And so, really, what we should be looking at and considering as to what is contributing to this epidemic of chronic disease and mental illness is we should be looking at what has happened, what's actually in the animal fats we're depriving our bodies of, that really contribute to health. And what we should be looking at is what is it about carbohydrates, the excess consumption of carbohydrates, that is making us sick. Because that's what we've been increasing over the last 50, 60 years. I've been collecting the data, and it very clearly shows that we've been increasing our consumption of plant-based foods for many, many years now. And that's what's really corresponding to this epidemic of chronic disease and mood disorders.
You know, here's a little fact, and I'll get back to the animal ones, that the average North American ate something like 2 pounds of potatoes 100 years ago, and now on average we eat 50 pounds, mostly in the form of French fries. And well, that is a pure delivery of carbohydrates.
Yeah, that's a direct hit on the pancreas. But, there's other forms of sugar as well that we're really abusing. I mean, fruits and vegetables are good, but, we really need to be careful. I mean, we have to use our common sense. I mean, we didn't eat a lot of fruits and vegetables until very recently in our history. What we did rely upon when we were hunter-gatherers, and that's basically over 99.5% of our dietary history, we were hunter-gatherers. And while we were hunter-gatherers, of course, we did not depend a lot on fruits and vegetables. What we depended upon were the animal foods. And, of course, at the time, the animal foods were wild. So the quality of the protein, the quality of the fat, was far greater than what we can find from the factory-farmed animal foods that we see today.
What is in the fat, though? Is it just, fat is not just, for lack of a better term, fat. What is it about an animal fat? What is it about lard or butter or any sort of animal-derived fat that the body needs?
Well, first of all, the fats help satisfy your appetite so you don't overeat. You think about the word saturated fat, and the word saturated and satisfy and sated. So when you eat enough saturated fat in your diet, you're going to be satisfied. You're probably not going to overeat. You will stabilize your blood sugar levels far more effectively if you focus on animal fats in your diet than other types of fats, the plant-based fats, of course. And the other thing that you would find in animal fats would be what are known as the fat-soluble activators, the fat-soluble vitamins, things like vitamin A and vitamin D. And those particular nutrients are key for so many different systems in the body. They're key for detoxification. They're supportive of your immune system, your nervous system. They're so critical to your overall health. And as we have reduced our consumption of the fat-soluble vitamins, this is really what is compromising our health. And we've seen this through research of people like Dr. Weston A. Price, who studied primitive cultures. And in primitive cultures where they ate adequate amounts of these fat-soluble vitamins through eating animal fats, predominantly, of course, these people were radiantly healthy. He didn't see cancer. He didn't see heart disease. He didn't see diabetes. He didn't see mood disorders. He saw incredibly healthy people as long as they ate adequate amounts of those fat-soluble vitamins in their diet. And as we displaced the animal fats and replaced them with more nutrient-poor foods, this is when you start to see the diseases creep into different cultures.
Now, before we go away to the news, you came upon this by your own trial and error. Can you because I find your story fascinating, that you thought you were doing everything and then just collapsed. And then how did you realize, maybe it's my diet? Maybe it's not me. Maybe it's what I eat that's killing me.
Well, you know, I tried all sorts of different diets. I tried everything from, you know, I call it macro-neurotic diet instead of macrobiotic, but I tried a raw food vegan diet. I tried all sorts of different diets after I got sick in order to, because I thought these diets were going to get me well. And actually, in particular, the raw food vegan diet made me much, much sicker in the end, even though I was being told the whole time how healthy this diet was. I didn't really connect the dots to say that the diet was making me sicker because everybody was telling me it was such a healthy diet. But when I came to my senses and I started eating animal foods, of course, my energy started to come back, and I started to really appreciate the importance of animal fats. And, you know, I really had to get that down pat in order for me to regain my health. And so this is what I do, you know, when I teach classes or when I work with people, is as soon as I get them to increase their consumption of animal fats in their diet, invariably they come back to me and tell me they have more energy, they have more focus, their memory is improved, their sleep quality improves, and so on. And this is just cause and effect, Tom. This is just, you know, common sense.
Quick break of the program. We got to do the news. But when we come back, Pam, I know there's so many people who are just at a loss for information. They don't know where to turn to. They're like, well, this book told me this, or, you know, the Canada Food Guide says this, or I have a friend who does this, and I want to eat healthy. Can you, without giving, full details on a meal plan for like 6 weeks, here's what you do. Give us a sample of what people you think should be eating for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, and maybe the healthy snacks. Even though, you know what, you want 3 square meals a day, people occasionally snack. So when we come back, can you give us the best advice you can for constructing a healthy plate?
Absolutely.
Pam Colleen is our nutritional consultant and healthy living advocate, joining us on Tuesdays from 10 to 11. My name's Tom McConnell, and the news is next here on News Talk 610 CKTV. 10:34 is our time. Pam Colleen joins us on the phone, nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate. If you want more information, Pam's written a couple of books as well. PamColleen.com. PamKilleen.com. PamColleen.com. Pam, let me just ask you, before I get into constructing meal plans, there are some people who can't properly digest some animals. For instance, I'm thinking of my sister-in-law, whose parents both come from Italy and cannot digest beef. And I'm like, do they ever have cows over there? She goes, no, they never had cows over there. Like, cows in this part of Italy is like a foreign concept. What do you tell people who have problems with digestion and meat? How should they get animal proteins? Just find alternative sources?
Well, you know, the problem usually ends up being the digestive system itself. The digestion gets weaker and weaker and weaker, depending on their diet to begin with. So if one is relying on a lot of fibrous or, you know, a lot of roughage in their diet, for example, that can really hinder a digestion. If people are following a low-fat diet in general, that can hinder digestion. And so if they eat protein, unfortunately, they do and can have adverse effects because of that. It is not the protein that we should be targeting, though. It's not the protein that we should be blaming. It should be, well, how is their digestion doing? And unfortunately, with so many people today avoiding meat, we become zinc deficient. And when people are zinc deficient, they're not going to produce enough hydrochloric acid in their stomach. And you need hydrochloric acid in order to break down protein properly. So usually when people complain of not being able to digest protein, invariably I ask them to make sure they do things to properly acidify the stomach. And that would be by eating things like properly made sauerkraut, raw sauerkraut, for example.
Really?
Or making sure that they may need a supplement. It's called betaine hydrochloric acid, and that can help acidify the stomach in order to help better break down protein.
Interesting, because when you look at something like sauerkraut, or maybe in Korean cultures, they have kimchi, mm-hmm. which is similar to it. That there's, you know, I mean, this has been a staple in diets for so long that it's not just because it just tastes good. There obviously has to be a reason for it to be in the diet.
Well, the thing about lacto-fermented foods is that they've been in cultures for thousands of years. Cultures relied on them in order to use this system as a food storage system. But what they didn't know is that by lacto-fermenting foods, you get all sorts of other benefits.
Yeah.
One being that you get more nutrition in the food, and another one being that you actually create a probiotic-type food that helps support digestion. So, you get all these spin-off benefits. It's also really economical, especially at this time of the year, Tom, when you can go to local farms and pick your fruits and vegetables and then can them or turn them into things like sauerkraut, and you can have the freshness of these foods year-round.
Now, if people want to, let's say, start from scratch and make a healthy breakfast, what would you recommend as a good, typical breakfast to start the day?
Nothing wrong with bacon and eggs, Tom.
Really?
And I know
I've been hitting a home run all these years.
Yeah, I mean, these are foods that have been wrongly demonized by the dietary dictocrats. And this is what my ancestors, of course, would have eaten for breakfast for generations, is those types of foods. There's nothing wrong with eating eggs every single day. You're going to have scientists, unfortunately, that think that eggs joined the dark side, and they did not join the dark side. They're very good for you. And then bacon as well, or sausage or something along that line to accompany the eggs would be a healthy breakfast. And if you want to have some high-fat yogurt and possibly add a few berries to it so you can get some antioxidants from the berries, now that would be one healthy breakfast.
What about eggs, and it always comes up, and answer the question again, what about eggs and the linkage to cholesterol?
Well, cholesterol never joined the dark side. That was just a fabrication based on some very, very bad science. Back in the 1950s, the president had heart disease, and the scientists were scrambling around to try to get recognition to come up with some sort of epiphany, something very unique to be able to target the rise in heart disease in general that we were seeing at the time on something. And they ended up blaming animal fat and cholesterol. And it really, cholesterol isn't even really a marker for heart disease. It's a terrible marker for heart disease. When people have high cholesterol, statistically speaking, they're going to live longer than people with low cholesterol. So, they really, really never should have blamed cholesterol at all. We need cholesterol as a precursor so you can actually form things like your sex hormones. We need cholesterol to actually keep our cell membrane stuck together properly. We need dietary cholesterol to form bile so we can properly break down fat. So, there's so many different important roles associated with cholesterol. It's really, really a tragedy that it was ever demonized in the first place. I call it the multi-trillion-dollar lie.
Do we need, when we look at eggs, egg yolks important just as much as I go an egg white omelet or the whole egg?
Eat the whole egg, because really where you're going to get most of your brain food is right in the yolk itself.
All right, and what is in the yolk?
Well, in the yolk, you're going to get those fatty acids that you mentioned earlier, Tom.
Okay.
So you're going to get the essential fatty acids. You're going to get another fatty acid called arachidonic acid, which is very, very important for your nervous system. And you're going to get choline, which is crucial for things like your liver to function properly.
And you know what choline is also excellent for? Helping get over a hangover. This is true. Every December 31st, I do the hangover show where we talk about, all right, if you want to minimize your hangover, and scientists say that choline in eggs helps clean up some of the toxic byproducts when you start to metabolize alcohol. So if you want, so eggs, not just brain food, liver food as well.
Well, liver is crucial for choline, and unfortunately we have an epidemic of choline deficiency. You know, we have this illusion, Tom, that we're getting enough food, we're getting enough nutrition across North America, and unfortunately that's a myth that we need to bust here, because, you know, we may be eating all sorts of different foods, but we're starving ourselves at the same time. And choline deficiency is a chronic and very, very acute deficiency that we see a lot of in North America.
When we go to lunch, what would one of your clients, what would you put on your lunch plate?
Well, you know, I went out for lunch a week or two ago with some friends, and I was the only one of all my girlfriends that had a steak, you know, because they're all terrified of red meat. So I sat there and I enjoyed my steak, and it had a beautiful red wine sauce and some nice sautéed mushrooms, and I had lots and lots of spears of asparagus with it, and it was just a lovely, lovely lunch. There was nothing really in it that I could complain about. I mean, obviously, Tom, when we eat animal foods, what we want to shoot for is that the animal has been pasture fed, that the animal's been out on pasture, and you can't always guarantee that when you're in a restaurant, but you do the best you can under the circumstances. And dollar for dollar, of course, my steak lunch was the most nutrient-dense food on the menu, and that's why I chose it.
Is that why people are making, you know, people make these decisions and they try to think, all right, and they so many times base it around calories. All right, well, I'm going to get this because it's fewer calories, and this because it's low fat, and this because it's light. But as you point out, but you're missing out on all these other nutrients that the big one you focus on in calories may not be the right one to focus on. Calories have a place as energy units, but don't forget your body needs more than just energy to run. We've got to do, as you mentioned, you know, your cell walls, your cell membranes, everything in cells, all the connections, the fatty acids. Your body needs more than just calories to run on.
Yeah, counting calories is a myth. You know, obviously, if you're starving yourself, you could easily fade away and turn into a thin rail and so on and so forth. But, you know, really, you know, I know a lot of people who are, you know, have moderate activity in their lives. They are hormonally balanced. They're happy people. They sleep well at night. They have good energy. They're positive outlook. You know that these are healthy people. And they may be consuming about 3,000 calories a day. That would be deemed a lot of calories. And it's really not. You know, that really when you're getting the bulk of your calories from animal fat, that should balance your hormones, which should keep you at a healthy weight. And remember, this notion of being thin or skinny isn't necessarily very healthy. I mean, Obesity Journal a couple of years ago published some data showing that if you were 20 pounds overweight, that statistically speaking, you were going to be healthier than somebody who weighed less than that, weighed less than you. So this notion of being thin or being skinny and that being equal to being healthy is really flawed.
We're so weight conscious, though. We're so weight driven that we think the only way you can be healthy, and we're so focused on body weight that we forget about, as you mentioned, don't you want to be happy? Don't you want to be like, it's like skinny and miserable is no way to go through life.
No.
And skinny bitch, as the book you hated last week.
Yeah.
It's like, you're skinny, but you're a bitch. No one likes that.
Well, and we just had the Duchess of Cambridge here who's been following this fad diet, the Ducan diet that we talked about last week. And unfortunately, I think she's spreading a very dangerous message to young women today to be that terribly skinny. I mean, she, to me, looks anorexic, and that's just not a healthy message.
We have to take a quick break in the program, so when we come back, tell us what's on your dinner plate. Then I got a couple of questions from listeners that I think are right up your alley. Okay, Pam?
Sounds good.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant and healthy living advocate, joining us on the program. Quick break in the program. Back to wrap it up with Pam after this. 10:49 is our time. Pam Colleen joins us. Got a couple questions coming up in a second. But Pam, before we go there, what's on your dinner plate?
Well, again, it, you know, maybe a nice roast chicken or roast beef, something along that line. It's nice when you can make a big roast because the leftover meat you can just cut up and use as sandwich meats as well, so that if you are eating, you know, a sandwich for lunch, it's, you can get a better quality piece of meat, because unfortunately the deli meats are really not necessarily the best quality meats out there, especially the commercial ones, of course. So
and with preservatives in them and nitrates
Yeah. It's just, if you just have a nice roast, whatever it may be, and you make a bigger roast than you would normally consume among your family, then you can slice it and freeze those slices and make yourself a much healthier sandwich that way.
When we talk about snacking, and I know you're not, you don't advocate certainly grazing all throughout the day, but occasionally, you know, if I'm going to eat later and maybe I need a snack, what should I be including? What would you recommend as a healthy snack?
Well, for me personally, what I try and choose is I focus again on the animal fats, so a piece of high fat cheese. If I can, I have my farmer who makes beautiful sausage, and it's really, really dense. And I can get the sausage locally. So I might snack on sausage. I might snack on high-fat cheese. Certainly, if people wanted to have an apple or some fruit, or maybe, again, this notion of having high-fat yogurt with some fruit.
What about nuts? What about
nuts would be fine. Yeah, nuts are fine. The thing about nuts is they need some preparation. They should be soaked overnight and maybe dried in a dehydrator or a low-heat oven, and that way you can bring out more flavor from the actual nut as well.
Okay.
And break down the anti-nutrients in it. So nuts are sort of a double-edged sword. You don't want to eat too many of them, but if you do eat them, if you can make sure that they're properly prepared, that would be the ideal choice.
I have a question from Woody, who asks, is there a difference between male and female diets that we should pay attention to, or is it all the same for both?
Well, basically, I would say it's the same for both, but, you know, what you want to do is pick the foods that when you feel satisfied, you've eaten enough food, you should know the quantity that is right for you. A woman is probably going to eat less than a man, but really when you focus on the fat and the protein and eat that piece of protein so that it resembles the size of the back of your hand in terms of the quantity, that should fill you up, and your body should, if it's healthy, should tell you when you're full, when you've had enough nutrition, so that you don't overeat. So that's my general answer. In different cultures around the world, and primitive cultures, they did reserve the female meats from the female animals for the woman, and the male animals for the men. But that starts getting into an impossibility here in this culture.
Yeah, I guess so. And just like you know, you talked about the diet for the blood type doesn't matter. There's not really a diet for the sexes.
No,
that in order to make hormones. If we really want to get into it, testosterone and estrogen are so similar chemically that to make one, you can make the other as long as you have the right inputs.
Well, you have to have the cholesterol. You have to have the precursors available to you, and that comes from the animal fats. You know, in primitive cultures here in North America, in the Native American Indian cultures, for example, if a couple couldn't procreate, if they could not get pregnant, they would go on a diet high in bear fat, and then sure enough, within a month or two, you know, she would get pregnant.
Bear fat.
Every native culture had their foods that were reserved for parents to be.
All right. Billy in Port Colborne wants to know, have you heard of the website twofoods.com?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Anyway, so maybe we'll leave that for another time, but it's just like it's spelled, T-W-O, or just like it sounds, just like it's spelled, T-W-O-F-O-O-D-S.com, and it's available to make nutritional comparisons, I guess, between two foods. So maybe another day, if you can look at that, we'll get an answer and see what you think. Now, Elsa, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Tom. Excuse me. Pam, you're so interesting and so knowledgeable. I love listening to you.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
And I had a smile on my face. Excuse me. This morning I had two eggs and an organic chicken sausage, some sliced tomato for breakfast.
That sounds really healthy.
And some ancient grain toast. Now, getting to the cholesterol, a few years ago at my annual checkup, the doctor said your bad cholesterol is a little high, so she's writing out the prescription. And then she mentioned it can affect your muscles. And I thought, do I want to be taking something that's going to give me another problem?
Well, and keep in mind when she said that, your heart is a muscle. And the research is showing, of course, that there's so many adverse effects to the statin drugs that one of them actually is that it can cause heart damage. Mm-hmm. So it makes absolutely no sense to me why people would take statin drugs when that's one of the side effects.
Well, I've known several people that have taken cholesterol medication and have had muscle seizures in the legs. So I never bothered, and I, you know, she brings it up every year, and I said, unless you can give me something with no side effects, I'm not interested. And at this stage of my life, I'm 75, and I don't take any medication.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah, no, the research, there's some more and more whistleblowers coming forward and basically just, you know, telling people the truth about the statin drugs and the statin industry. Mm-hmm. It's these drugs have very, very dangerous side effects.
Absolutely.
And, you know, cholesterol, as I mentioned earlier, is really not even a marker for heart disease. It's a terrible, terrible accusation that was made many, many years ago. And unfortunately, it's been repeated over and over and over again, and people actually believe it. You know, we have to look to other things that are causing inflammation in the body, and that would really, in simple terms, be the overconsumption of plant-based foods.
Whenever I've had my blood pressure done, I mean, many people, sometimes they have a setup in Shoppers or whatever, and many times the comment has been, you know, it's just like a teenager. Well, you know, so that's good.
Elsa, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
10:56 is our time. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. Well, Miss Colleen, we don't have much time left. Next week, I don't know, I sent you this article that I found yesterday that was really interesting. I found on chemical calories. Maybe next week we can either touch on that or we'll go somewhere else with diets. But I thought it was interesting that all these creams and potions and amazing that these hormone inhibitors are in our soaps and shampoos and are in our skin creams and our moisturizers. And people put this on every day without a second thought that it may look good for my skin, but it's doing damage to the rest of my body.
Who may be struggling with this. I had multiple chemical sensitivities, or what is known as environmental illness, and so I was like the boy in the bubble. You know, I was basically, I would react to almost anything toxic in the environment. And today, you know, all is well. I've cured myself of that. And it's really debilitating when you can't go into a store because you can't handle the smell of the detergents or the smells coming off of new shoes or what have you. So that is a reversible condition. But, you know, it's important to talk about this toxic load. So absolutely, we can talk about it next week.
Pam Colleen, always a pleasure. Thanks for talking about this, and thanks for opening. And the feedback I get from this is either right on, or what is she talking about? So it's either right on or what is she talking about? And I always encourage the people that say, "What is she talking about?" I'm like, Pam is not just talking off the top of her head like I tend to do. She's done the research. She's written a number of books. This is her profession. Have you done the research? Have you gone into the history of cholesterol, or have you gone in the history of the Canada Food Guide? Have you been there to determine what made it up? Have you been the one who's researched diets and seen what the body needs? Take a look at her website, pamcolleen.com, and do your own research. I mean, go in and look at what scientists are now saying about the foods we consume and what is healthy and what is too healthy. And there's growing amounts of evidence. And Pam's not the only one saying we overconsume carbohydrates. This is clear that we have an overconsumption of carbohydrates. And it doesn't matter if it's processed refined sugar or too many starches, or it's just that is not the basis of a healthy diet. No, not many people have done this in the past. Always a pleasure, Pam. Take care.
Thanks so much, Tom. See you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.